Okay, I'm going to talk to you today about some of the materials that we're working with at the moment in our lab. We're particularly interested in composite materials, perhaps taking properties that are available, you know, one property from one material, one property from another, and combining them, looking for new synergies. Okay. And I'm going to run through maybe three case studies of the type of materials that we're looking at currently, just to give you a flavour of what we have going on. The first area that we're interested in is photocatalysis, and I've just got a very kind of crude cartoon here. If you're interested in using radiation to induce chemistry, you could take a semiconducting nanoparticle, something like tin oxide, very, very cheap, very commercially appealing. And you can irradiate it. And ideally, of course, you want to use sunlight as your radiation source. You can promote an electron from the valence band up into the conduction band, and that electron then hopefully you can do some interesting chemistry with. Okay, that might be, for example, taking a contaminant and passivating it. And here we've got a classic toxic dye, something like rhodamine B. You could potentially quench that. But there's a few problems that crop up along the way. The first is that the band gap here may or may not be suitable for the kind of radiation source you want to use. Okay? The second is that the electron up here, once you've got it here, it may not do any very interesting chemistry at all. It might just flop straight back down into the valence band, so you quench the charge carrier. So how could you go about controlling the system in a way that gets around these problems? Well, you could introduce a second material. In this case, lead sulfide. You've now got a different band gap that does the photo promotion, so you're dealing with a different part of the electromagnetic spectrum. And of course, your electron, once generated, is now physically separated from the hole that it's left behind. So you can enhance the charge carrier lifetime. That increases the possibilities for doing something useful with your electron. Okay, this of course is a cartoon. So what do these things look like in reality? Well, here is an example. This is electron microscopy data. This is the kind of thing that's very important to us. It is interrogating in some detail what these nanomaterials actually look like. Okay, you can see it's a nanocomposite. It's of the order of 1,000 nanometers in diameter. Okay, but crucially, we've got tin and lead in this case are in close proximity, so it's reasonable to talk about some of the synergistic properties that I've discussed so far. Okay, and indeed, if we take this material and expose it to rhodamine B, then we can show actually an enhanced degradation of the dye here in the presence of the nanocomposite relative to the individual components separately. So we are improving the performance. Now, I've said that this is about 1,000 nanometers in diameter. Basically, it's a powder, okay? And from a practical point of view, that creates a problem. It's a catalyst, so you want to recycle it. And powders are intrinsically difficult to deal with. Okay? It's very, very difficult not to lose them. So if you do your catalytic test, recycle the material, repeat, what you can notice is a modest loss in activity. Now, there might be a variety of reasons for that, but one of them can be, quite simply, you are losing catalyst. You're only recovering 99, maybe 99.5% of it each time, but over 100 cycles, you can see the effect that'll have. So that brings us on to immobilization of nanomaterial, something else that we're looking at. And this is particularly through the avenue of metal organic frameworks, or MOFs. This is something that you might have come across already in undergraduate lectures. It's very straightforward to make many MOFs. You take a metal salt, you take a linker, in this case methyl imidazole, you combine them, very simple chemistry, and with this particular combination of reagents, you would get a MOF called ZIF8. Okay, and as you may know, if you know one thing about MOFs, it's probably that they're porous materials. Okay, so you have this kind of three-dimensional grid work with metal nodes, organic linkers, very, very high surface area. And you could imagine encapsulating nanomaterials, nanoparticles, within that MOF. Indeed, you can grow MOFs around nanoparticles. That is fairly well established. However, the snag is that traditionally most moths, Ziphate included, grow as powders. So you've still got this problem of how do you recycle your material without running the risk of losing it along the way. Can you grow materials like this in a monolithic form? The answer to that now is yes, we can. So we're working with groups around the world on many of our projects, and this one is no exception. We work with a group in chemical engineering here at Cambridge, and we're able to grow Ziphate, not as a powder, but as a monolith. So you can see, this is just looking under an optical microscope, you can see the scale bar. We're able to grow this material. These are single crystals of Ziphate grown to sort of half centimetre dimensions. So you can see suddenly we've shifted the game completely. If you want to recover this material from a reaction, you could pick it out. You don't have to centrifuge it, you could pick it out with your fingers. I wouldn't do it myself, but you could easily recycle this material. Okay. Next question is, can you put moths into it, or can you grow a monolith like this around a pre-existing nanoparticle? You've probably guessed that the answer to that is going to be yes. And here is an example of exactly that. So we've taken tin oxide that I showed you on the last slide, and we've incorporated it into the synthesis of monolithic Ziphate. We've got now tin oxide supported inside monolithic Ziphate. You can tell trivially that something has happened, but of course, again, more scientifically, we need to interrogate this. So scanning electron microscopy is the kind of tool that becomes very useful, and we have experts in the group who do a great deal of microscopy. So, photoelectron spectroscopy as well. Again, the kind of work that having synthesized composite materials, we're then interested in going on to do the analysis. Okay? And there's a variety of applications outlets for this kind of the work that would combine nanomaterials and their catalytic activity with porous materials and their ability to be recycled and house those nanomaterials. And then the third example that I'll just run through today deals with the idea of, can you design an individual nanoparticle? Can you manipulate its structure to enhance its properties? So I'm just going to go through some work we have ongoing, which is more magnetically orientated. Okay, so we started this in 2013, where we were making cobalt nanoparticles. Cobalt, of course, is toxic, and the FDA in the US much prefers the use of iron if you're interested in magnetic materials from a biological perspective. So we've moved our emphasis away from cobalt onto iron, but the fundamental chemistry is really the same. What we did in this work was demonstrated that you could take a cobalt nanoparticle, or more recently an iron nanoparticle, and you can coat it with carbon. And then you can coat it with iron. Now, if you have an iron nanoparticle and you open it up to the air, it's probably within about 2 or 3 seconds iron oxide. That's the sort of rate that you're dealing with for the oxidation of iron nanoparticles. Cobalt is a bit more stable. That would last a day or two. Okay. So if we take a particle like this, where we have iron coated with carbon and then more iron, and we air expose it, the iron shell around the outside, that oxidizes very quickly to iron oxide. The point of that iron oxide shell is really now just to hold the carbon in place and ensure that if we think further ahead down to applications development, the carbon doesn't get washed off, doesn't get degraded, doesn't get removed. The point of the carbon is it protects the core. This core remains elemental iron, turns out, for a couple of months, in fact. So we've gone up from a few seconds to iron cores that 2 months later are still elemental iron. In the case of cobalt, the stability of the cobalt core is so far over a year. Okay? And that's the kind of enhancement in stability that we can engender by putting this carbon layer in place and then sealing it in using the peripheral iron oxide. Once again, though, we need to characterize these materials in great detail. So we've got advanced microscopy. This is all done by people in the group. Okay? And they all come in and learn this, you know, in the early stages of a PhD. So interrogating these particles in detail, working out what their structures are, what their elemental composition is, why the elements are where they are, and what function they're serving. And that's the kind of thing that allows us to design particles better and better with a view to applications, in this case, in drug delivery. Okay, and I think I'll finish there. Thank you.